We are here to discuss spiritual topics, but often the question arises, and it's a relevant question, that we are here in this world, and okay, we need to rise to the spiritual platform, but what about the practical realities of our living in the world here and now? Lord Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, gave a spiritual message to Arjuna that was very much concerned with the here and now, as well as the spiritual dimension. Arjuna wanted to run away from his material responsibilities, but the Bhagavad Gita, one central theme of the Bhagavad Gita, is that Krishna is convincing Arjuna not to give up his material responsibilities, his this-worldly responsibilities, but to pursue his spiritual development within the context of his living and acting in this world. Now, many people ask that, well, if we all take to Krishna consciousness, then how will the world run on? How will the economic systems run on? We can take a clue to the answer to this from Krishna's very basic and literally down-to-earth statement in Bhagavad Gita, Anad Bhavanti Bhutani. All living beings subsist on food. So when I say down-to-earth, food is produced from the earth. And if we're thinking about economic systems and how it will all run on, prosperity, economics, it all depends ultimately on what is provided by the earth. You may be a brilliant economist and have so many schemes for organizing the economy, but ultimately we have to depend on produce from the earth. Even for our living, we need food, air, food, water. Air is abundantly available in all parts of the world. Water is available in most of the world, that inhabited areas of the world. It's not a major problem. Food we don't see as a major problem, but actually city dwellers who are used to purchasing food, they don't realize that outside the city there are huge areas of land in which people are busy interacting with the land to produce food. Actually, the earth produces food, but with a little input, organization, and labor, the earth can produce plenty enough for everyone to eat. We all need food to eat. It's a truism, but it's so true that we often don't think about it. How essential is food to us? Where does it come from? We can live without nuts and bolts and silicon chips and the internet. We can live without the internet. Shout it from the mountaintops or beam it through the internet. We can live with things not invented by human beings or banged out in factories. We can live without notes which represent money, which we consider to be money, which are printed, or as the world goes more and more toward digital money or plastic money. We can live without a bank account. I've lived for years without a personal bank account or any bank account. That, of course, I'm in a bit of an exceptional situation, but until recently in India, most people didn't have a bank account, and they lived their whole life without a bank account. Because what you need to sustain the body is food, clothing, shelter. These are, in Hindi, it said roti, kapda, makan. Food, clothing, and a house, somewhere to live in. And water and air are not mentioned. They're taken for granted. Although nowadays, with so much air pollution and water pollution and unavailability of water, or sometimes a plethora of water, water can be a problem. But generally, it's taken for granted. But the point is, to live in this world, the one thing which we really have to consider as most basic is food. A nation may be very powerful with military might and financial clout, but they have to see to food security also. The country I was born in, United Kingdom, is in a terrible situation for food security. If there's a disruption in the world supply chains, for whatever reason, Britain's in a mess because they produce less than 50% of the required food to feed everybody day after day after day after day after day. It's required that food is on the shelves and in the homes, and the food supply is replenished. You can't go for very long without replenishing it. Finally, everything comes down to food. With food, you can live. Anad bhavanti bhutani, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. All living beings live on food. And without it, you die. People starve without food. Winston Churchill knew that when he orchestrated a planned famine in India and killed millions of people. Without food, you die. No farmer, no food. No farmer, no nation was a sign that was seen around Canada. Just remember, as we live in these sophisticated, complex, unnatural cities, we rely on food. There's a lot of talk and moves toward vertical farming, urban farming. Yeah, it's possible. You can grow food in the city also, but you still require earth and you still require people to oversee it. Hydroponic farming, you can grow just in water. That's true. So maybe you can get away from the earth, but they will have to see how possible that is in the long term. Generally, man's wonderful inventions end up making a bunch of unforeseen problems. That's always the pattern. We have to see if such foods can be nutritious in the long term. There's so many questions arise. We don't see in the foreseeable future that regular farms on the land outside the cities will be replaced by anything else as the basic form of sustenance of the population of the world. So the farm is the basic economic unit. Farms are traditionally run by families, the family farm. It's another aspect of traditional life which has been under severe attack from people living extremely unnatural lives, removed from their roots, living in the cities, raised in the cities, who are living a completely artificial life, and then they don't want families, and they don't have families, they're not raised in families, they don't see the value of families. Families are practically essential in farming, and families and villages, people cooperating with each other. It's not a rat race. It doesn't work when we have to live on the land and produce food. There's no massive profits to be made. Well, yeah, again, in the cash crop, international, globalized, consumer civilization, people who are growing cash crops like tea in Africa have now switched to avocados because they make more money and they have to have security guards guarding their avocados because it's such a lucrative crop. But again, this idea of cash crops, growing food in one part of the world, sending it hundreds of miles away, this is all very unnatural, artificial, and in the long term, it's going to be unsustainable. That which is artificial cannot last. We think it will last because it's been going on. Practically, this consumer society has been going on in America, especially since the Second World War, and now it's spreading around the world. But an economy predicated on producing and selling needless necessities is an artificial economy. Needless necessities. Did you get that oxymoron? Necessity means that which is needed, and needless necessities. So we invent so many different things, and then we think that it's a necessity. It is a necessity for everyone to have at least one smartphone. It is a necessity to have motorized transport, a car, or here in India, more common for those who can't afford cars, is a motorbike. But you need something to get around in this artificial life. And so many artificial, needless necessities. It's an artificial economy. Natural wealth comes from the land. You may think, well, what's this got to do with anything spiritual? Not very much. But it is an elaborate consideration of the question of how we live in this world in consciousness of God. Because God gave us the land, the water, the air, and intelligence, and knowledge of Himself. And we made a big mess of it, thinking that we don't need God, we can do better than God, we can conquer nature. The world's a big mess, just in case you didn't notice. So I'm just talking here about some basics of economics, if you like. The basic economic unit is what we can eat. In a time of famine, you can sell a bowl of rice for 10 bars of gold. Someone who's starving, the gold won't help them. What to speak of a pack of printed paper notes? It's not going to help you. You need food. It's the basic necessity for everyone. By higher arrangement, God's arrangement, from the land, we can get everything that we need to live. The earth itself, we can make buildings from earth, depending on the kind of earth or the kind of topography that we're living in, we can bake earth and make bricks, or we can make bricks from earth and straw, cob, without burning at all. We can make wood houses, we can make stone houses or hybrid houses. I see even in America up to the present time houses are being built. Very commonly the walls are, some are of brick, some are of wood. Different materials can be used. You can dig a hole in a hill and make a house. By the arrangement of God, from dirt. We call it dirt. There's a saying, cheap as dirt. The earth is very valuable. The earth gives trees and plants. We can live from the produce of trees and plants. And all living beings, anad bhavanti bhutani, all living beings live on food, on food grains. Anna means food. Food generally means food. It can mean food grains and it can mean rice. So it has varied meanings in different contexts. But even the carnivorous animals, we talk about the food chain. If a lion eats a gazelle, the gazelle subsists on grass, which is produced from the earth. So all living beings ultimately subsist on the largesse of the earth. People living in cities, they don't see the miracle of how you put seeds in the ground. With a little care, the earth sends forth crops. It's a miracle. We see again and again and again. Put in some water. You have to know a little bit. You say, there's a saying we refer to someone disparagingly as a farmer, as if they're stupid. But there are things to learn. Even traditionally, people all over the world have been uneducated in academics if they're farmers. But there's so many things you have to know, when to sow, down to the exact day, according to the movements of the moon, when to sow seeds, how to sow them, how deep in the ground, whether you push them hard into the ground or leave the soil loose, making furrows, which crops to plant side by side or in order, rotation, crop rotation. There are many things to know. But basically, nature provides the seeds, the water, the soil, the sunshine, the moonshine is also very important. As Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Gama vishacha bhutani dharyami ahamojasa pushnami choshadhi sarva somo bhutvarasatmakaha. Krishna says, I enter into every planet and hold them in their course by my prowess. We wonder how the planets are going on. It's by Krishna. And Krishna, becoming the moon, in the form of the moon, he nourishes and gives juice and life to all the plants. It's Krishna, it's God. The earth produces food even without our intervention, but agriculture is also needed to produce systematically, abundantly. As Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Krishi go raksha vani jam, vaisha karma svabhava jam. There is a section of human populace who are engaged in agriculture, cow protection, and trade. They are called the Vaisha community. Now, there are so many different varieties of food and vegetables and grains. Being raised in Britain at that time, we didn't have so much imported food. So the vegetables we'd have were potatoes, cabbage, carrot, turnip, not very popular, swede, not very popular, parsnip, not very popular, beetroot, carrot, I almost got up to 10, Brussels sprouts, peas, broad beans, I'm struggling a bit to think of what other vegetables we had. Ah, that's about it. There are probably two or three more, but there are so many varieties. When I was traveling in the villages in Bengal in the 1980s, I was just astonished. There's so many varieties of what in Bengal is called shak, spinach. Many of them just grow wild here and there. So many varieties. When I thought I'd seen them all, then some more. So many varieties in the tropical countries. So many. That's just spinach. And then there are so many varieties of roots and tubers. And it's just, I don't think anyone's come to the end. Maybe some taxonomist in biology has found out or knows what all the species are, but so many different kinds of vegetables and fruits. And here in India, the grains that people eat, apart from rice, there are different kinds of millets, so many varieties of rice, so many varieties of millet, so many varieties of wheat, corn. Just the earth produces abundantly so many things with a little organization. If people, good farmers, can produce abundantly, and we see in India especially in Punjab, the farmers, Punjab, Haryana, famous as being very good farmers, in Gujarat, very good farmers, the Telugu people, very good farmers. They have the knack of doing it. And of course, fruit. Again, fruit in England. We used to get oranges and bananas imported. Otherwise, there were apples and pears. And that was about it. Lemons imported. Apples and pears. And then, yeah, a little bit of quince, damson, plums, not many. So many varieties of fruit. Here in India, so many varieties of mango, and then in different parts of the world, so many varieties of mango. It's all produced from the earth. We need, as Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita, very practical for organization of society, we need deep, thoughtful, intellectual people who can give guidance to society, who are spiritually elevated, so they don't use their intelligence to exploit others. They are called brahmanas. And we need strong men with leadership qualities who can take decisions, who act for the benefit of the people. They take charge, they're leaders. They take charge not to exploit the people, but to protect them, to organize them. These are called kshatriyas. Then I already mentioned Krishi go raksha varnijam vaisha kama swabhavajam. They're a class of people who naturally like to and cultivate the earth. If you give them some earth, they can take some fairly useless land and they can make it into a green paradise. Israel is an example. The land of Israel, of course, there's so many political issues involved in this, but when the Jewish people resettled in Israel after generations being outside, then the semi-arid land, semi-desert land, they made it into a green paradise. Some people, they have the feel, green fingered. That's a saying in English. They have green fingers. They can just make things grow. I've seen one devotee, Raghunandan, Bengali. He came to Gujarat in a tiny strip of earth. We had the temple, a pathway, and then a tiny strip of land, and then the wall dividing from the next. From the next property, and the next property is a high-rise flat. So it's just a little strip of land with very little sunlight. And of course in Gujarat, you don't get that much rain. But within a short time, he was growing tulsi plants taller than me. Green fingers. No one asked him to do it, but he just saw there's some land. Okay, let's do it. Let's do something with it. The natural knack of doing that. And of course, there are other people who are naturally artists, musicians. Some people are just capable of and comfortable with doing labor jobs like that. Now we're talking about farms and farmers. Farmers, they're like the stomach department. They provide for the stomach. You can have very good brain. The brahmanas are like the head of society. You have a very good brain. You can have very strong arms to fight and defend from all bad elements. You can have good legs to carry you here and there and work hard. All departments are needed. The stomach is needed. Without the stomach, then however intellectually adept one may be, however strong one may be, however willing to work one may be, without the stomach, without the food that is required, everything collapses in the individual body and in the whole society also. You may think, well, why bother to talk about this at all? Well, Krishna talks about it in Bhagavad Gita. And it is something that we should think about, especially we who are members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We should know that our founder, Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, put so much emphasis on getting back to a more simple life, close to the land, farming in simple ways, not with all this artificial implements and fertilizers, especially not insecticides, pesticides, they call it. Not that. There are other ways. Just like, for instance, by planting neem trees, as is commonly done. Now not very much in India like it used to be. By planting neem trees around the fields, not only do you get a good source of toothbrushes instead of having to make millions of plastic toothbrushes which pollute the earth, you get a good supply of toothbrushes, and also if there are neem trees, you're not going to get your crops destroyed by locusts, which is a problem which is beginning in India now. Swarms of locusts coming in. If you have neem trees, you won't have a problem. There was never a problem previously. So go back to the way that God made the world. It works pretty good without our messing it up. That's the idea. By nature's arrangement, we don't need tractors. Some implements, simple implements, but otherwise the farm animals are there. Men can understand how fields have to be plowed, but they don't have the strength. I mean, you could engage slaves maybe, but horses and oxen, they naturally have enough strength to pull the plow, and other things also, apart from the plow, there's the oil for oil pressing. You need to go round and round and round. Man and animal work together. We see horses and oxen, just like a man, if he's strong, he likes to work. So the horses and the oxen, they like to work. They work with men. There were breeds of horses which were, you don't see them now because they're not needed in the tractor age. In Britain, there was specifically in England, the Suffolk Punch was from Suffolk, the county known as Suffolk. The Suffolk Punch, the breed, big and strong and can pull a plow all day. And they rest at night and then again the next day. And then they'll also get a rest from time to time, just like humans also take a rest. They have festivals, they have Sunday off, and horses also get a day off. They're looked after nicely, they're fed nicely, given what they need. You still see today, here in India, in some places, ox power for plowing the land. Generally, people prefer to use tractors. They get subsidies. In the long run, the tractors damage the land, plowing with tractors. Of course, it pollutes the earth by making tractors and the diesel that's required to run it. And it doesn't provide the kind of nourishment that the oxen do by when the ox, they're going in the land and they deposit their dung, which nourishes the land. It doesn't take much to feed them. If we cultivate the rice or the wheat, we take the grain and the stem goes to the ox. So all are happy. The ox plows the land and takes the produce. The man engages the ox in plowing the land and takes the produce. The arrangement of nature, the arrangement of God, is that the dung from the animal is just suitable for fertilizing the land. Gives it just a nice balance of all the nutrients needed. No need of all these nasty chemicals which poison the land, poison the farmer, and poison the people who eat it. And that's especially true of pesticides. We think it's very fashionable to have organic farming, but for generations and generations, people were doing farming. They never heard of organic farming or natural farming. They were just farming. That's all. We became too intelligent. We just do it. We just farm the land the way that God gave us the ability to do. God gave us the land, the water, the air, the sunlight, the moonlight, the water, did I say the animals? That's all you need. You don't need factories. Just like in, I often visit Bharuch, Ankleshwar in Gujarat, where they have the GSFC, Gujarat State Fertilizer Corporation, where they produce fertilizer for much of India, maybe for overseas also. The whole city stinks with smell of pollution. Because they're producing fertilizers from chemicals, from oil and oil products. Poisonous. We're putting poison in the land in order to produce food, and then we're surprised when people get cancer and so many diseases. I was talking about the dung of the cows and the ox and horses. It's also used as fuel, very good for cooking, the beautiful taste of food cooked on dried cow dung patties. We have milk from the animals, especially cow's milk, is in Ayurvedic understanding, it nourishes not only the body, but the disposition to be religious and godly. The cow eats grass, which we can't eat, and turns it into milk, and there's egg. She gives us the extra. Cows are very happy to be looked after. If they're looked after nicely, they'll be very happy, very affectionate. If we're affectionate to the cows, they'll be very affectionate to us. I was recently told one man in South America, not a Krishna devotee, but he believes in looking after cows and not killing them, and he has a whole bunch of cows, and one of his cows never had a calf but keeps on giving milk throughout her life. It's fairly common, actually. Cows, they, even without giving a calf, or they have one calf and then they don't calf again for years and years after, and they go on giving milk out of affection, out of love. If we love the cows, we brush them, we call them by name, they'll reciprocate. They're very feeling animals, and they'll give milk. It's very good food. Our vegan friends will protest this, but well, they have a point. They have a point, that very good point, that cows are mostly treated very badly and slaughtered, but it doesn't have to be like that. If the cows are happy and we look after them and they're happy and they happily give milk and we happily drink the milk, then there's no need to be a vegan. You can be a lacto-vegetarian. The cow is our mother, of course, because she gives milk. Of course, different parts of the world, people drink goat's milk and llama's milk. Donkey's milk is very costly in India because it's said to be a cure for, what is that, for diabetes or tuberculosis? I think it's diabetes. Anyway, camel's milk similarly is considered to have very good therapeutic qualities. Buffalo's milk is quite common, makes very thick yogurt, but at least in India, cow's milk, and in most of the West also, cow's milk has been the staple. Not in, in Greece, mountainous area, goat's milk has been the staple, sheep's milk also, but generally cow's milk, and then we get milk, and then we get butter, and we get ghee, and then we get yogurt. We can make so many milk sweets, and apart from yogurt, there is kefir, and so many different fermented products. One reason why it's hard for people to be vegans or to remain vegans is that we also have taste buds. From milk and milk products, and especially ghee, we can make so many tasty items. It's harder if you cut that out of the diet. So I know that if I say these things, vegans will jump on me and pound me to death. Not literally, but they're a very aggressive bunch. But anyway, I believe in cow protection and drinking milk, and Lord Krishna believes in that. It is healthy food. Some people say that milk is bad for you, but generations, at least here in India, generations of people in India have lived without taking meat, without taking eggs, without taking fish, but taking milk and being very healthy and nourished by that. And some great sages in India used to live only on milk. They just drink a little milk. We're not saying everyone should do that, but just making the point that cow's milk is very much valued in Vedic culture. Even in the Bible, it's spoken about the people of Israel, the promise to take the people of Israel out of their bondage and bring them to a land of milk and honey. Milk is supposed to be symbolic of paradisical prosperity and well-being. Even Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his supreme aspect, he can do anything he likes. He likes to live with cows. It's his pastime to live in a village and look after cows. And so Krishna is known as Gopal, tender of the cows, maintainer of the cows, Govinda, he who gives pleasure to the cows. We live in a very bad society which kills cows. Let us take Lord Krishna's example. Cut out of this nasty, exploitive, literally poisoning society and live as God made us to live. Live on the land with Krishna in the center, chanting Hare Krishna. Living on the mercy of the land, the cows, simple living, high thinking. I'm going to read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Text 40, for more about this basic point. We're not talking about the highest spiritual levels of realization, but just the basic point that we live in a very greedy, exploitive, ignorant society which poisons the land with chemicals, poisons our food with chemicals, poisons our mind with all kinds of gross and horrible desires, disrespects Mother Earth, and tortures and kills Mother Cow. And how can we expect any peace or even sanity in such a horrible society? So I'm reading from Srila Prabhupada. Human prosperity flourishes by natural gifts and not by gigantic industrial enterprises. The gigantic industrial enterprises are products of a godless civilization, and they cause the destruction of the noble aims of human life. The more we go on increasing such troublesome industries to squeeze out the vital energy of the human being, the more there will be unrest and dissatisfaction of the people in general, although a few only can live lavishly by exploitation. The natural gifts, such as grains and vegetables, fruits, rivers, the hills full of jewels and minerals, and the seas full of pearls, are supplied by the order of the Supreme, and as He desires, material nature produces them in abundance or restricts them at times. The natural law is that the human being may take advantage of these godly gifts of nature and satisfactorily flourish on them without being captivated by the exploitive motive of lording it over material nature. The more we attempt to exploit material nature according to our whims of enjoyment, the more we shall become entrapped by the reaction of such exploitive attempts. If we have sufficient grains, fruits, vegetables, and herbs, then what is the necessity of running a slaughterhouse and killing poor animals? A man need not kill an animal if he has sufficient grains and vegetables to eat. The flow of river waters fertilizes the fields, and there is more than what we need. Minerals are produced in the hills and the jewels in the ocean. If the human civilization has sufficient grains, minerals, jewels, water, milk, etc., then why should it hanker after terrible industrial enterprises at the cost of the labor of some unfortunate men? But all these natural gifts are dependent on the mercy of the Lord. What we need, therefore, is to be obedient to the laws of the Lord and achieve the perfection of human life by devotional service. So that's an extract from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. He has given us everything we need to know for spiritual advancement and how to live in this world in the best way so that we can pursue spiritual advancement, as Lord Krishna shows himself in his Vrindavan pastimes. We need the land, we need farmers. Krishna is there, and Balaram is there with his plow. We need cows, and for social organization, we need some social organization. Krishna also talks about that in Bhagavad Gita. We need varnashram dharma. Life need not be so complex. Srila Prabhupada recommended simple living and high thinking. Let us do that. Let us who are gifted with the knowledge given by Srila Prabhupada, given by the Vedic sages, given by Vyasadeva, given by Krishna, let us who are blessed with that, share that knowledge with others and practically enact it. Make farms so that people can come and live simply and chant Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nit hayachuna kang padiyone patikrit vacha kaku shatameta da humra vime hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad gauranga chandra charne kurutanu raga ha parivadatu jano yatata tava nanu mukaro navayang vichara yamaha hari rasa madirama dati matta bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama hari krishna 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 hari hari Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.